Moral Revolution community, welcome back to our podcast. I'm so glad you joined us today. Let's talk about it.
Hey, welcome back. Let's talk about it, listeners. Today we have a special guest with us.
Very special.
Very special. Tiffany Williams.
Hello.
Hey.
Welcome.
If you don't know Tiffany, you may remember Ken Williams, who's been on our podcast before. He's part of our team. Tiffany is his lovely wife and relationship coach. She does many things. You want to get to know her. She's one of those people you want in life just to know. She's a lot of fun in general, but she's also super smart. Like I mentioned, relationship coach. We've actually done counseling and coaching together, and she's helped me out a lot. Is able to kind of get on your level. This is one thing I like about you. We didn't talk about this before. I'm just going to throw it out there. Is you're able to get on someone's level and relate and validate where they are without carrying it. Like, it seems like you walk out of the conversation where I feel known and loved and cared for, but it doesn't feel like it's like you're carrying it around, but you still remember it enough to next time we were like, hey, how is this going? And I'm like, oh, she remembers, she was paying attention.
Aww. So thank you, Abram.
She's a great one to know. you are a relationship coach. You've got sales and marketing in your background. You specialize, I don't know what you specialize in, but you also have experience helping team dynamics. You've helped MR and Changed. And other organizations, kind of like, how do we navigate our different team dynamics as well? You are a mom, you've got parents, you've got in-laws, you've got every form of relationship that you could have.
A turtle,
navigating relationships with a turtle.
That's a big deal.
That is. So that's why we wanted to bring you in today, because you know all the things about all the people.
That's a little bit too high praise, but I'm sure I can help a little today.
She can. This episode is initially airing in December, so everyone's kind of gearing up to go home. We've actually planned this podcast for, I think, 2 years to do, and we just, for whatever reason, it never happened. But now it's happening, because when we go home, there's usually two big experiences when someone goes home for Christmas or for the holidays or for vacation or whatever. There's the I'm home and I can let down and I can relax and these people know me. It's a place of rest is one experience. And then there's the other experience that I think is unfortunately maybe a bit more common, is it feels a lot more triggering. Mm-hmm. Like we kind of go in and things just are on edge. You find, here's all the reasons why I left home maybe, or here's the people that I love that I'm related to, but I'm just rubbing up against them and butting heads on different things. And so that's kind of what we're talking about today, is how do we navigate all that in a way that you don't walk out hating the people worse, with more anxiety, not wanting to go back home, or acting out even sexually or with alcohol or with like just self-medicating with Netflix even, you know, all these other things. How do we navigate those things? So I'm just going to throw it to you. We're about to walk in. What's the first thing we got to know or think about when we're walking into these dynamics?
Well, I first want to say I'm so glad we're talking about this because it's been my experience after coaching and just knowing people that are navigating their sexuality, that so many times, even though the holidays are supposed to be the most wonderful time of the year,
supposed to be,
it turns out to be some of the most triggering and some of the most,
so true,
some of the worst cases to where we jump right back into old patterns that we've been free from for years or months.
Yep.
And we've been doing really well. And then suddenly the holidays come around, which are supposed to be the most wonderful time of the year. And it causes us to spiral. Why is that?
Yeah.
I think there's several things at play here.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a bunch of them, you know, being back in connection with our family. And a lot of times we're spending a lot of time with our family. So for me, my husband and I, we live thousands of miles away from our family. So when we come to visit, we are staying in their homes. We're with them. And that's the case 24/7. And that's the case for a lot of people, which, by the way, I enjoy that.
Yeah.
But, you know, that it's a different dynamic. So how can we set ourselves up to really have a great experience and to stay pure and clean in our own hearts?
Yeah.
I think the best thing we can do to start is to really ask the Holy Spirit, bring the Holy Spirit in and ask the Holy Spirit, what is the goal that I should have for this time with my family?
Okay.
And also say, Holy Spirit, is there a goal that I have that is actually not healthy?
Ooh.
For example, you know, we could we could be like, hey, I am so tired of my sister hanging out with her loser boyfriend. I miss her. I want this time around, I want her to hang out with me more.
Yeah.
Or it could be like, I want my dad to finally see that he was wrong to treat me the way that he's treated me all these years. Now, these are goals that we can totally have subconsciously.
Yeah.
But the problem with goals that include other people changing is there's nothing we can do to make them change. And so we're going to be disappointed.
Yep.
How many times have you gone and spent time with your family and you were disappointed when you left? Because we have these goals that are written or unwritten that are not met, or these expectations that are not met. So starting off by saying, okay, Holy Spirit, what is a good goal that I could start off with?
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, some good goals. For me, I like to have my goal just be, I want connection. I want connection with my family. It's not probably going to look the way that I would pick because I'm not the same as all of them. So I'm going to step down off of my expectation of what connection looks like and try to connect in a way that they'll connect. Another goal could be, I'm just going to stay at peace. I'm going to keep the supernatural peace of the Lord.
Yeah.
And when I lose it, I'm going to go back into the quiet place with him.
Yep.
I'm going to find it again, and I'm going to keep walking in peace.
Did you even have, like, so you're walking in with a goal and a game plan almost.
Yeah.
A little bit, right? You're
That's
like,
good.
Okay, well, as soon as I lose it, or like when I've realized I've lost it,
mm-hmm.
here's the steps I need to do.
That's right.
Like even, you know, maybe it's the quiet place. Maybe it's a coffee shop. You're like, hey,
yes,
I'm actually going to go ahead and say, even though I only get to see you one time a year or a few times a year, and this feels very high stakes, mm-hmm. I want to prioritize. I'm going to go to a coffee shop for a little bit and just get back by myself, reset, and then come back in.
I like that, Abram. Knowing yourself is important too.
Yeah.
Like if I'm an extrovert, so, and my whole extended family, they're introverts. So it's important for me to know that and to realize, oh, I think they're going to be really content just staying home, reading a book, drinking hot tea. And I am going to want to make sure that I have times throughout my visit where I go out and I go to the mall and I go do something. I go visit some friends because, you know.
That makes you probably feel antsy. They're like, they're all sitting around.
Right.
You feel like a lump on the log.
Right. So just knowing yourself and knowing them is really important.
Yeah. I'm the lump on the log. I'm the introvert. I'm like, this is great. We're just sitting chilling. So it's fantastic. Okay, so you mentioned connection then. How do you break that apart? So what does actually connection look like? Like you mentioned, for me, it may look different for them. I think it's good. One thing I heard you say, which I really loved, was when you make your goals about them, all of those goals were actually negative things.
Mm-hmm.
Not around the loser boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
My dad to finally treat me, not to treat me poorly. Like you have all these negative things. I don't want this to happen. I don't want this to happen. I don't want this to happen. But your goals that you mentioned were all positive things. These are the things I want to move towards.
Yes.
Which I think kind of almost sets your own perspective better towards the event. I think everybody's had the holidays where their goal is survival. Like, I'm just trying to get through this, cross it off the list and move on. And you feel that like the whole way you're just like, how many more days, how many more hours?
Mm-hmm.
And you can watch people kind of cross that off. But your goal is like, it's positive. Like, okay, we want to connect. How we do that? Like, well, what's it kind of take that onto like another level down? Like, what's that? What could that look like? Or what's some benchmarks we can move towards?
That's a great question. I think one of the most important things on connection is to realize even if we seem like we're similar, we really have some pretty big differences. So, for example, excuse me, I grew up with two sisters, and we grew up in the exact same house, same parents, and yet we are very different.
Yeah.
And so to understand that even though we all speak English, we all grew up in the same home, we actually have each one of us, every person on the earth has their own language, which is their communication style, and they have their own worldview, which is going to be very different than mine, even though...
It's fascinating because we both grew up in the same...
Yes, yes. So it's very important to keep this in mind. If you can learn their language, and if you can go a step further and learn their worldview, you're going to be able to connect in a way that you've never been able to connect before. So let me give you an example of that.
Yeah, please.
When I was in my early 20s, I lived in New York City and I worked for a mission organization that would go around the city and connect with different communities, serve them in some way, and then speak the gospel message to them.
Yeah.
So even just on my city block, there were, you know, many, many cultures represented, but the building right across the street from me was full of Russian Jews. So one day.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
one day my boss said, let's have an event for them. Let's serve them. And let's, you know, let's see if we can speak the gospel to them. Well, wouldn't it have been great, Abram, if I knew Russian? Okay.
Yep.
That one little thing could have helped my communication with them infinitely because I'm having to do this, you know, Jesus loves you, like with hand motions. I did not know their language. So starting off understanding, wow, I think your communication style and mine are different and there's reasons why. Maybe I'm a more sensitive person. And so maybe I need more kind of kid gloves when you talk to me. Maybe I don't like, you know, direct language or even joking around too much because I'm a little more sensitive. Or maybe I do like you to be direct with me because I want to make sure you're not manipulating me. And so I need you to tell me the truth and be direct. And that's why I speak directly to you. To understand how someone speaks their language and why is going to help you so much to not take things personally and to be able to communicate in an effective way.
And to actually understand what they're actually saying.
Yes, what they're saying. Yeah. And for them to understand you, like I'm talking to the Russian and we can't really communicate.
Yep.
But then to take it a step further, let's say I had learned Russian. Mm-hmm. I really also need to understand their worldview. Why they think things are the way that they are.
Yeah.
Like how they see the world.
Yep.
Because that event that we wanted to do for those, for that Jewish community, if we had set it up to be on a Friday night, guess how many people would have showed up?
Wah, wah.
Right. No one, because of Sabbath.
Yeah.
We have to know where they're coming from to be able to connect with them in the best way.
Yeah.
And that is so important to know with our family members, even though we may have been raised in the same place. You know, we have the same parents usually.
Yeah.
That does not mean that we have the same worldview. We have different fears, different desires, different longings that we're needing from each other.
Yeah.
That if we can get to the bottom of what are those, our connection will be so much better.
Right. And it's fascinating you say this because, like, I think anybody can look at their own family, but I'm just like thinking of my own, like my brother and I, 3 years apart, grew up in a very small community in rural West Virginia. But we are just drastically different. And like the older we get, the easier it is because we both have different life experiences that kind of diverge us further and further. But even at a much younger age, we're like, our story's context was very similar, but yet different things were happening.
That's right.
How, for my family and for other people that we talk with, we're kind of like, it feels a bit more like trial and error. You're like, I'm doing this, or you hear them say something and then you have to go, okay, so what do you really mean by that? Or what could you mean?
Right.
You know, and then it's,
if you're emotionally aware, you're going to do that.
Yeah,
but if not, you're probably not.
True. So like, it feels like it's a lot of trial and error of just trying to kind of figure out, those things. How do you begin? Is there a simpler, quicker way? Is there a hack? Is there some form of template or guideline to throw out there to be like, here's boxes I can start to put people in? I know no one wants to be in a box, but we have to, like, we all categorize people anyways. We have to start to go, okay, this is how your worldview is different.
Right.
Knowing you're Jewish goes, okay, great. Friday night, Saturday's off limits.
Right.
How do we do that with family that seems, should be the same as us?
It's a really good question. I think some of the biggest tools that we can use, and this, you know, not everybody will agree with me, but this is my perspective, is personality tests.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. We've talked about this a lot. Yeah.
Yes, because, again, it's not because it's putting anybody in a particular box or saying this is how you are, period, but it's just kind of giving us some clues about the person.
Yeah.
Like, I am actually certified in the Enneagram, which I like because there's 9 specific types that are kind of clear. So I can understand your type. You can understand mine pretty clearly.
Yep.
And it really just kind of details, here's what this person needs. Mm. Here's what they're kind of usually afraid of. And here's kind of what they're longing for from relationships. And oh my goodness, if you can understand those things, you can go really, it's a really quick way to be like, oh, I remember you need this. That's why you're responding this way.
Yeah.
For example, my husband, he and I are kind of opposites.
Oh yeah. Could you share the example?
Yes. The Enneagram helped us so much.
Yeah. When you introduced us to the Enneagram, I was like, I don't really know what it is. It looks like a weird pentagram looking thing, but you were describing it. I was like, oh my goodness, this is fascinating. So my wife and I did it, and like a bunch of friends have done it, and we've done coaching through it to help just understand. So can you explain,
yes,
you and your husband?
It's the best tool, in my opinion, to just kind of get a deeper perspective on the other person.
Yeah.
So my husband and I were opposites, there was this one fight that we had almost every day, which was when the kids would come home from school, they would kind of throw their backpacks into the hallway.
Yeah.
We have four kids. And that he would come home every day and see the backpacks in the hallway and be like, my life is over.
You guys have been married how many years now?
It's 18 now. But
okay, 18. And at this time, it was probably 15
or something.
So you've had a lot of life experience that you're like, we know each other.
Yes, we do. And so he.
But here we are.
Here we are.
Yeah.
We couldn't. It was one of those things where we could see eye to eye on so many things and just we couldn't see eye to eye on this thing.
Yeah.
So he'd be upset. The backpacks are on the floor again. Tiffany, can't you see the backpacks are on the floor? I'm like, I'm so sorry. I actually don't see that. I just don't. I see a lot of other things, but the backpacks on the floor, that's not a big deal
to
me.
I
don't care.
It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the examples of many when it comes to like organized versus I would rather spend my time doing something else.
Yeah.
And so when we understood the Enneagram, I learned that his type, which is the type one, has a deep need for organization and things looking right because their inner critic is kind of beating them over the head constantly saying, do you see that's out of place? That's out of place. This is, pick that up.
Fix this. Yeah.
They're the reformer. They're put on the earth to make things better.
Yeah.
So they see something that's out of place and they can't help but be like, oh, that's out of place.
Yeah.
Well, when I understood that, I had so much empathy and compassion for him. Like, I didn't know that your inner critic was beating you over the head with that. I can totally pick up the backpacks. That's no big deal.
Yeah.
I can make sure the kids pick up their backpacks every day. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that one little tweak, and of course, this has not just been one, has helped us connect so much better.
Yeah.
And that you can totally do that with your family. We about 5 years ago, my parents and sisters and I sat down and we all took the Enneagram test.
Really?
And it was great because we were able to not just kind of learn about ourselves, but then at the end, we all read our kind of results to each other and asked each other questions.
Ooh.
So like, oh, you mean you're more private? Does that mean you don't want me asking you all the questions I'm constantly asking you? Like, how do you feel when I ask you those questions? It's like, yeah, I'd rather you didn't. I didn't know that. Or like with one of my sisters, she's a type nine, which is the peacemaker.
Yeah.
So she's not going to just outright say what she's thinking or feeling. You kind of have to give her time. So all my life, I'm quick. I'm going to.
You're the quick outgoing extrovert. Like, here's what I think. Here's what I know here.
Yes. So I did her a disservice.
And you quick pause. Are you good? Okay, you don't have anything to say? Let's jump on.
Yeah, if she pauses, I'm thinking, well, she's done. I'm going to jump to the next thing.
Yeah.
Well, when I learned about her type, I learned they don't just say it all right up front. So if she paused, I paused. Mm-hmm. I learned to do this. And I waited to see, does she have more to say? And she would. And then she'd pause again, and I'd pause. And she'd have more to say. And finally, after 40 minutes, she's really opening up pretty deeply. I'm like, oh my gosh, I've done this wrong all these years because I didn't know that little tip. And that's what's so great about a personality test.
I love that. I have so many questions off of that. A quick disclaimer I just want to throw out there with personality tests. I know a lot of people, some people love them, some people hate them. They feel like they're kind of polarizing. But personality test doesn't give you permission to be a jerk.
No, it does not.
And it doesn't give you permission to do maybe bad or unhelpful habits.
Right.
It's literally just going, oh, this is kind of where you're coming from. I don't need to correct you. I don't need to fix you. And I don't need to excuse you. I can just go, oh, I can understand you. I see your worldview. I see the perspective that you're bringing into this situation because I'm bringing a different perspective here. Right or wrong, we can figure out later if we need to figure out. But now I can at least see where we're coming from.
I love that. My mentor said, don't use a personality test as a sword and don't use it as a shield.
Mm.
So don't use it as a sword saying like, Abram, that's you being the whatever type you are right now. You know, gosh, I can't stand it when that part of your personality comes out or whatever. Or like, oh, that's such a two thing.
Yeah.
Okay. But instead, it's really supposed to be there for connection, not as a sword.
Yeah.
And then also don't use it as a shield saying, oh, well, that's just my personality. Sorry, I'm late. Can't help it. That's my personality. Right. Same thing that you're saying. That it's a tool for connection.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. So I've heard a lot of people talk about the Enneagram, for example, and it does often feel like a sword or a shield. It feels like it's portrayed as the negative thing. Like, for instance, in our coaching, I actually thought I was one number and you were like, you sound more like this. And as you described it to me, I was like, holy crap, that is my internal world. so like the one, for instance, is the reformer, right? It like yeah. I love the way you described it. Is they're the ones on earth to make the world a better mm-hmm. place. I've also heard it as like you're the perfectionist. You're the one who has to nitpick and criticize everything. And I love the way that you approach this. And maybe it's the accurate way to apply it, but the way that you approach it is from the redemptive. This is the skill. This is a gift that God has put inside of you to help see the world. Maybe it's because of the fact that I want to see the world a better place. But it's like it's what you kind of bring to humanity and mm-hmm. society. Could we quickly try to go through kind of each of those numbers just so and give like a two sentence version of this is what this person kind of is and what they look for, just mm-hmm. so we can even begin to get a broad view of how some of our family could be different from us.
I love that. And thank you for sharing that about how there are different ways to look at the Enneagram, for example, and any other personality test, because I would want to say, make sure if you do look into the Enneagram that you look for someone with a gospel-centered approach.
Yep.
Because the problem with Enneagram and a lot of the Enneagram stuff out there is it's very humanistic and it points people back to themselves as the savior.
Yeah.
When really, if you're using the Enneagram as a tool to recognize, oh, here's some things I should bring to the Lord and some fears that maybe I don't want to hold on to anymore, and he is the answer, then it's a great tool.
Yeah.
Or, and at the same time, to use it as a tool to understand people better. So let's start with...
We'll do our countdown, right?
Okay.
The one.
The one. That is the reformer, which Abram Goff happens to be, the great Abram. And that is the person that is put on the earth to make things better. And yes, they can, at their weakness, be perfectionistic, but at their best, they see the world the way that it could be. And they raise the standard for all the rest of us to kind of come up there, come up higher in the way that we approach the world. It's a beautiful thing.
Ones are amazing. Okay, sometimes they're my favorite and sometimes they're my least.
That's how I feel about my number.
But that's how we view ourselves.
That's how it is. Yes.
Okay. Number two.
Number two is the helper.
The helper.
And they are the bleeding hearts. They're the ones that have nothing but gushing love towards other people.
Yeah.
Now at their worst, that kind of love and huge heart can turn into kind of a need for love back. Like a little bit of it can feel a little bit like there's a string attached. Like, I'm going to do this for you because I need you to love me.
Because I loved you.
Yes.
I'm going to need something.
Now. Yes. Yeah. They're called the helper because they're so good at helping. But sometimes at their worst, there can be a string attached.
Yeah.
At their best, they are absolutely so self-assured that they have so much love from God that they don't need to look for it in other people. And they can just give out of a pure heart. It's such an incredible.
You kind of think like Mother Teresa type of person.
Yes. That's a very good example.
Okay. Great. Mm-hmm. Okay. Number three.
Okay. Number three is the achiever.
The achievers.
So they're the ones. My sister is an achiever.
Yeah.
So they, like, she tells me, like, so she went to law school after college. And I the other day I said to her, did you want to be a lawyer? She never used her law degree. Did you want to be a lawyer? She goes, I was looking for the next thing to check off my list. And so she chose law school, like the hardest
thing
ever.
Not like run a marathon, not like.
Well, she's done that too.
Oh, goodness. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she's the achiever. Yeah. So that is such an incredible human being because they have the drive and the ability to do so many amazing things for this world.
Yeah.
But at their worst, they're going to lean towards, I get my affirmation and my self-esteem, my self-respect based on what I've done.
Wow. Yeah.
And like, that's how I'm going to receive love. But at their best, they're able to know I am okay just for being me. I can totally be myself. I don't have to impress anybody. And so they can go off and they can change the world. I mean, they do. If you look at the threes, if you look at a lot of people that are doing incredible things out there, there are a lot of times they're threes.
Like, I would imagine maybe Elon Musk.
I mean, I would imagine.
Because he just seems like he's like, I conquered this, now I want to go to this.
Yeah.
Something I'm hearing in all of them so far, and maybe it's true for all of them, I don't know, but at their weakness, this is how I get love.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it all comes back to, I need love as all humans.
Mm-hmm.
We're all looking for love and affirmation. This is the route that I'm taking to get it.
Yes, and especially for twos, threes, and fours, because they're in the heart center.
Okay.
So they really are looking for love more than somebody like me, my number, I'm looking for security. So we are looking for different things, but...
But that's great, because you're looking at your parents or your sister-in-law or something, you're going like, okay, what are you looking for?
Yeah.
And because I'm like, this super annoying behavior I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Is probably the negative side of it. But what you're actually looking for underneath is like, okay, you're looking for love and you think that's going to get it to you.
Absolutely.
I can meet you. I see that, but I can meet you here and give you love here. Okay, so tell me about four. Fours are still in the heart category.
They're called the individualists.
Okay.
And so they're the ones, you know, they're often the poets and the artists, not always, but often, because they're very, very creative.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that often are going to want to be the most unique in the way that they look.
Yep.
And what's beautiful about them.
Sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, actually, at their worst, they're also very highly in touch with their emotions. More than anybody else.
Which makes sense out of an artist.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so what's amazing about them is they can actually plumb the depths of all these deep, dark emotions that a lot of us never want to go to and find the gold down there and bring it up and portray it in a way that the rest of us can accept, like through a painting or a song that just touches you. It's like they've been there. They've experienced the depth of that emotion. I don't have to, but I can experience the depth, but I can get something amazing out of that through that song or that painting. So that's the four. Now, at their worst, they can spiral into depression and, you know, into kind of being maybe
too much introspective.
Yes.
Introspection.
Yes. Yeah. And kind of get grounded because of the weight of the emotion.
Yeah.
So that's them in their weakness, but in their strength, they are the ones that are out there making a difference in the world in terms of like making sure that there's no human trafficking and things that are like very personal and they have so much empathy for.
These people are probably the ones who love dramas.
Probably.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, let me feel all the things.
They like the macabre. They like the interesting. Yeah.
Okay.
That's true.
So that's your heart people. I think 5, 6, and 7, all of those are a different.
They're the head people.
The head people.
Mm-hmm.
What are they looking for?
They're all looking for security in different ways.
Okay, great.
And so for fives, they're the thinkers, or the investigator is another word that's used for them. And they're the ones that are, so whereas the fours are the very deep feelers, the fives are the deep thinkers. So they're not as in tune with their emotions, maybe not at all, but they're very in tune with their thoughts. And so they want to be the most competent, the most capable. They want to know everything so that they can avoid feeling anxiety, so that they can feel secure.
So if you had this person at your dinner table, they probably know all the current events.
Oh, yes.
They know everything about everything. You throw out a random topic and they seem like they've studied it.
They're experts on
because
a lot of things.
They probably have.
Yes.
Okay. So, okay. And they're looking for security, right?
They're looking for security, and they want to be capable and competent.
Okay. Yep.
So at their worst, they can be, you know, not as in touch with their feelings, and they can come across more cold.
Yep.
But at their best, they're the guardians of knowledge, and they can be so deep and change the world through the way that they think.
Wow.
You know?
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, like, some of the best minds are fives.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sixes.
They're the loyalists, and they are the best friends that you can have. I mean, they will stick with you through and through. They're also looking for security. They're the most overtly anxious typically. And so they're looking for like a person or a group or an organization to kind of help guide them, because maybe they don't necessarily trust themselves.
Okay.
So they're wanting to know, what do I do here?
Yeah.
And so at their worst, they're going to spin out with anxiety, maybe be more cautious. Like they don't want to do things. They feel they need the input from somebody else.
Okay.
But at their best, they're going to be self-assured. They're going to know their best path. They're going to walk in it, and they're going to be, they're like the wind beneath our wings.
They're like the thick and thin. I'm with you.
They 100%. They are the ride or die.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yep.
Yes.
Those people. I have so many. Let's finish this, and then I'd like to just throw in some thoughts. Okay. So that's sixes. Sevens.
Sevens.
I feel like sevens are the most easily identifiable.
That's what people say. Yes. They're the enthusiasts.
Yes.
So they're the ones that would be me. They're the ones that are a lot more gregarious. They're usually extroverted. They value fun over anything else. They're the life of the party. And at their worst, they're going to spiral into kind of chasing after the next best thing and like the experience and the fun and the enjoyment.
Okay.
Instead of actually doing, you know, picking up the backpacks off the floor and like being responsible. At their best, they're the ones that are kind of bringing the joy into the world and helping other people realize, you know, it's okay to stop and have fun, to enjoy your life, to not carry things so deeply. That's what the seven kind of brings.
I feel like I need more sevens in my life. I get too serious about trying to change the world. Like, let's have fun as we go. Right, fun. We should do
but
fun.
But we need you too. See? Yeah, see, it's great. We need to remember, like, oh, we got to change the world.
Okay, so that ends our security-looking people, the mind, our mind people. And now we have eights and nines, and then I think it wraps
and
around
one yeah.
again. So eights and nines. Tell me about eights.
Eights are the challengers. And they are the ones that are the front line. They're on the front lines in the battle of, like, think about Martin Luther King Jr.
Yep.
I would imagine he would have been a type eight, a challenger. He's challenging the social norms of the time, but he's doing it not for himself, but for his people group. Like, it's for his people. And so challengers are amazing at that. They're going to be more direct, like really direct. They're going to, you know, for fun, they could come and try to pick a fight with you. You know, they're intense people, but what's so amazing about them is that they have their people that they want to fight for, and they do it. So at their worst, they can be, you know, labeled as unfeeling or maybe too direct or too intense. But at their best, you know, they're the Martin Luther Kings, and he needed to be intense and he needed to be direct to make change.
Yeah. They're the one leading, identifying social change.
Yes.
And going, let's go. Like,
let's go do it. I'll fight for you.
Yeah.
I'll do it.
I have thick enough skin. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I will go at it until something's changed.
Yes.
Okay, great. And then nines. Tell me about nines.
Nines are the peacemaker.
Yes.
And they're the ones that they're such beautiful people. My best friend is a nine. So they're able to understand. So if you look at the Enneagram chart, the nine is up at the top. And that is, it's that way for a reason, because they're able to look down on all the other numbers to see and be able to see and understand every perspective.
Wow.
And every side.
Yep.
And so that's how they're able to kind of make peace with other people. Like Pocahontas, I think of, was probably a peacemaker. She was a Native American, and then, you know, the white people came in, and she was able to speak both languages easily and like help each other understand each other. And so that's the beautiful thing about nines. Now, at their worst, they can merge, is what we call it, to someone else and kind of not necessarily know who they are, because they can see from all sides.
Yeah.
So they can merge with somebody else and lose themselves. But at their best, they are able to negotiate and hold space for every person and just be a wonderful human being. The most understanding and the most kind.
Yeah. I love this. And this is why I think I love as you're talking and explaining them, I'm just picturing the dinner table. Like, right. You have the person who's running back and forth between here and the kitchen, who's serving everybody all the time. They're probably the two.
Right.
Which means they're looking for that. Is like, I can just meet them after the meal once they've served everybody, just going, hey, or even before the meal, outside of their acts of service, just to sit down and go, man, I love you so much. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
Mm-hmm.
The six is looking for people.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just going, hey, I'm going to, you know, just giving them the value. I'm just going, thanks so much for being with me in there. Like the nine, the peacemaker, just giving them space, pausing, giving them a little longer to go. The challenger, the person who's constantly just feels like they're nitpicking everything in the room, just to go, well, have we done this? Have we done this? And they're the brash, harsh one.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of sit down and you're just going to go, oh, I don't need to be offended by them.
Mm-hmm.
I see they're actually trying to, they're going to be the ones making change.
Like that's
what's a good question for an eight.
That's their language.
Cause that's the one that honestly is challenging to me sometimes. Cause I don't know how, if they're picking stuff apart and they're pushing, like what's a good question to get them to flow into their strength rather than their weakness?
I like that. Well, one thing is back to the understanding somebody's language or communication style thing. It's super important to understand with eights is that their communication style is they actually feel more intimate with you if you're having a little bit of an argument. Like,
really?
Yes. Like if like that feels like intimacy to them, some sort of like heated argument.
Yeah.
And also, so that might be like, I'm pretty sure one of my family members is an eight, and I've noticed that they enjoy kind of
egging people on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I think they want that interaction with that kind of intense.
Yeah.
It feels good to them. So that's something important to remember that like that they're not just trying to antagonize me. They're just looking for connection, just like I am.
That's fascinating. Because I mean, the way I grew up outside of numbers is just, it's much more non-confrontational.
Mm-hmm.
So that feels very abrasive to me.
Yeah.
But I understand, like, let's play a game together, because then we're having a shared experience.
Yeah.
Or let's solve a puzzle, like,
right.
a mystery. to me, that's engaging for connection to something. So if I can see eights as they're not just trying to pick a fight, they're literally trying to get like a fun little
they're trying to have connection.
Connection
it's,
going on.
It's a positive thing.
Oh, then I can lower my anxiety and mm-hmm. my maybe offense at it mm-hmm. and then engage with them in such a way to go, okay, let's have a little joust and then I'll like wipe myself down afterwards.
Yes. And here's another thing to remember about eights is, you know, they're going to be direct with you. If you're not direct back, so I'm not the most direct person sometimes. And, you know, I might try to like, I might get a little like, ooh, stymied by like, ooh, that was intense. And so I might kind of like backpedal and be like, well, what one thing we could do is we could try to think about. Yeah. If I do that, what it can communicate to the eight is you're not trustworthy, Tiffany. Like, you're not telling me the truth. Huh. I need you to tell me the truth so that we can connect. So I need to just go ahead and be direct back with them.
Yeah.
And that's the best communication style to use with the eight.
That's amazing. Okay, so we did a little deep dive there for a second that you can obviously go down this and get your master's degree and many more. What's some other, I'd love to talk about maybe some other personality tests just to kind of help round them out. Yeah. And then what's just some final thoughts as we're at, because I could literally have a 2-hour conversation with you on this and feel like we scratched the surface. Because there's so many dynamics to families that right. we're trying to understand. And at one point you've used the term of like their lenses. Mm-hmm. I think this time you said worldview, mm-hmm. but it's almost like they're using different color lenses mm-hmm. that they're putting on their face that they just see the world differently.
Right.
And so even just having that understanding or perspective helps me engage with my family differently, just to kind of go, what color is she wearing? Mm-hmm. Or like, what color is he wearing? And maybe they're an eight, maybe they're an introvert, maybe they're
yeah.
this type of personality type. Everyone's a mixture of all sorts of things, but it just starts to give me curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes. It gives me curiosity towards them rather than judgments.
That's so good. Yeah. Typically I bring different colored lenses and we could try each other's lenses on. Like if I'm wearing pink lenses and you're wearing blue lenses, our worlds look completely different. And you can't tell me if I'm wearing pink lenses, you can't say the world is not pink. Yes, it is. To me, it's completely pink.
Yeah.
It's very valid that I would see the world pink. Now, it's not accurate, but it's valid. And
but
so,
neither is my blue.
Right. Neither is your blue. So if we could trade and you can see through my pink glasses and I see through your blue glasses, I'm like, oh my gosh, no wonder you do this the way you do it. And you say these things and you act this way
yeah.
because that's the way you see the world. It's
sure.
so important that we do that.
Yeah.
If we want good connection.
Okay.
You said other personality tests.
Yes.
A couple I would throw out there too is over the last time I was with my in-laws, we all took, including all the kids, the Myers-Briggs test, which I appreciate for kids because they have kid tests out there. And
oh, cool.
So Myers-Briggs is really fun and it's a little less intense than some of the others. And it highlights a lot of the strengths and just a few of the weaknesses. And then you can compare, like we compared like, oh my goodness, my daughter and my mother-in-law are the same personality type. And that makes so much
wow,
sense. Like,
yeah,
of course they are.
Sense.
And
yeah.
My husband and his sister had the same and like, wow, that's so interesting. And then my mother-in-law and I were all the same except one. So Myers-Briggs, you have four letters that make up. So I had three of the same, but not the fourth. And we were able to say, oh, that makes sense. That's why you like this and I like this, because we have that letter different. We seem so similar, but that one letter makes us pretty
and
different.
I feel like that would, you know, it's like two different colors of orange or beige.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Right.
It's so close that it's almost more annoying. I'm not saying you and
right,
your mother-in-law.
Right, right.
But like sometimes you with your family member, you're like, oh, I feel like we should get along, but we just keep hitting and like, this
it's
is why.
It's just the one
because
little
at
difference.
At this point, we diverge and we're, okay, that makes sense. Okay, I can see it from that perspective.
Yep.
I still like mine, but I can see it, so.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good.
That's really good.
Okay, Myers-Briggs.
And then the last one that's been around for forever, but it's fun for families, is to take the love languages test.
Yes.
And just to know, like, Abram, what's your love language? Do you know it?
Quality time.
Quality time.
Yeah.
For me to know that is going to change the way I interact with you.
Yeah.
My love language is gifts. So tomorrow I'm going to expect a gift from you, Abram, and I'll spend some extra time with you.
Let me just
so.
Type that in real quick. Yeah. Great.
But to know that about our families, like, oh my goodness, my mom, you know, she really values words of affirmation. So I'm going to make sure that I bring that and share with her things that I love about her. It's just so easy.
It's so, yeah. Okay. So I ask you this offline, but I think it's a great question online. Some people... I joked, I said, you know, podcast listeners are typically self-growth people. So they're like, I love all these things already.
Yeah.
Or like they're researching it right now. What if your family isn't as much in the self-growth, like development type of area?
Yeah.
How do you, they're never going to sit down and take a personality test. What's some ways to start to kind of grasp some of their worldview ideas without necessarily having them take a test?
That's a great question, because that does happen a lot. I would say if you can Google getting to know you questions, and there's a lot of great websites out there that have, you know, 100 best getting to know you questions. Well, delete all the ones that seem a little too personal. Like some of the questions could be, when's the last time you had a good cry? Forget that one. But there's other questions like, what was the one that I mentioned to you before?
An experience you want to relive again.
Yes. Yeah. What is an experience you would want to relive again for the first time? People love to talk about themselves. They just do. So if you can get them to kind of share, well, here's an experience that I loved. You know, I went to the such and such concert when I was 13. And then you can actually use that as like to ask some follow-up questions. Like, why did you like that band so much? What was it about that experience that was fun for you or memorable? And that's an amazing way to actually sort of get to know their worldview and their language without... even if they're a more closed off human being. So something like that, I would recommend.
That's good. And asking like, oh, what was it about that?
Yeah.
That's a great why question. That doesn't sound, sometimes why can sound judgmental.
Yes.
I was like, well, why'd you like that? But it was like, oh, what was it about that? That's a great phrase to kind of help them go, tell me more about that. Like unpack that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember at one point my grandma was showing pictures and, somehow the story, I accidentally stumbled upon it. I was like, oh, well, what happened there? Something like this. She told me about how her and she went to the drive-in movie theater on this date at one point. My grandpa was there and came over. Like her date went to the bathroom or something, came over and started talking to her. She ended up going home with him or like leaving with him and not her date.
Hilarious.
And then he went on and he's like, hey, I'm about to ship out for the war. Can I write you? And so they wrote, and then like, I'm here now because of this. But I like stories like that, like, hey, what would you like to relive? You know, or even older, your older family members are like, how did you and Papa meet?
Yes.
You know, like what was it you first liked about her?
Yes.
Or, you know, those types of like liking questions.
That's good.
Experiences. Like, I think those kind of start to like, those aren't like, tell me your deepest, darkest secret.
Yes.
Like, what do you have the most shame over in your life? You know,
it's
just like, oh, what do you like? What was this?
I like that.
Those are great ideas. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're about to wrap up here because we need to land at some point. Like we said, there's so much here you can go into. You've studied this for years. I'll just put the plug out here that if you want to do some form of coaching, you do like individual coaching, you do couples coaching, like married or dating, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
You probably do, I don't know if you do
groups
studies.
Groups or teams.
Yeah, groups or teams. Like, we've all done it. Highly recommend. We'll put her website in the show notes, but what is it just verbally?
Relateability.us. So the word relate, the word ability.us. Because my goal is that everyone would gain the ability to relate to each other. So
nice.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Relateability.us. Okay, so we'll put it in the show notes too, but check it out. You can sign up for coaching. Any final thoughts? Like, okay, you're about to, we've learned some perspectives to kind of walk in here. Anything you're like, before you get on the plane... or before the plane lands, here's something else just to kind of consider.
Definitely. That's so good. I mean, so often we can hope and wish that our family members are going to be on their best behavior. And, you know, if only my brother-in-law would, you know, stop doing that thing that he does. And by the way, I love my brothers-in-law. That's just an example.
That's not what she said. No,
I didn't say it. But, you know, we can kind of hope that someone else is going to do whatever it is that we want them to do, when really, if we can start with us, we will be so much more, we will go into the holidays at such a better place. So, you know, I love the verse in Psalm 139, search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and see my anxious thoughts. Tell me if there is any offensive way in me and lead me on the path everlasting. It's scary to say that. Is there any offensive way in me, God? But here's my thought about that.
As I'm walking into all this dramatic situations, you want to tell me
what is offensive about me?
How I've screwed up, so I just have a lot more compassion on everybody else.
And think about, you know, God says he resists the proud and he gives grace to the humble.
Ooh.
If we can start off in a humble posture, like, show me where I'm wrong, God.
Yeah.
I'm getting chills. Like, that's something that we're going to have grace, more grace. We need more grace, right? So
always.
Think about this. I like to think about, like, there's so many things within us that are in the shadows. Either we don't see them or we don't want to see them.
Yeah.
And when we ask the Lord, hey, shine your light on me. What happens when you shine your light on something? A shadow is formed. And so when we say to the Lord, shine your light, we can now see our shadow. And it's out there. We can say, okay, I see that I do that thing. Thank you for showing me that.
Yeah.
I don't like that. And I need to repent. You know, whatever it is that the Lord shows you, I need to repent. And maybe I need to get healing from some wounds. Like, I need to go talk to somebody. Yeah. I need to get some healing. Or I need to lay that down. Like, ugh, I hate that I do that. Lord, show me how to change that pattern. So if we can start there, we're going to go into the holidays with a clean heart. We're not going to be blaming other people. We're not going to be expecting them to change. We're just going to be, you know, we're going to be doing us. And like Danny Silk always says, I can't control anyone else. I can only control myself on a good day.
On a good day.
So, you know, that if that can be our posture, like, I'm going to be the best version of me. It's such a great place to start.
That is great. So, Tiff, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing your brilliance. If you want more of her, you know where to check it out, relatability.us. Thanks for engaging on this topic. We know it's not an easy one. Again, this is coming out in the holidays, but realistically, this is a year-round thing. Mm-hmm. It's a everyday thing, even with your own family, your roommates, mm-hmm. your coworkers, your spouse, your kids, constantly learning how they're experiencing the world and being able to come alongside them, be on their team to mm-hmm. move forward. So, we just wanted to bless you with the grace needed to navigate and enjoy your family and your coworkers.
Thank you guys for listening. If you want to learn more and check out all of our awesome content, be sure to head to our website at moralrevolution.com and our socials, Instagram, Facebook, all of them. But before you leave, don't forget to like, review, subscribe, all of the things. We want you guys to come back and join us. We enjoyed having you. See you next time.